This is The World Tonight. Good evening, I'm Douglas Edwards, CBS News. The big question remains tonight, who will succeed Spiro Agnew as vice president? President Nixon is studying secret lists submitted by congressmen, and in a quiet way, the race is on. Roger Mudd has a report.
There was one clear signal from the Congress to the president today, and it was this. Do not send us John Conley's name as the Agnew replacement if you want to avoid a fight. Capitol Hill has never really been fond of Conley, but his name has consistently figured in the speculation. However, congressional sentiment against Conley that emerged today was surprisingly vigorous, almost savage, and for both parties it revolved around his conversion to the GOP. Democrats think him a turncoat, Republicans a Johnny-come-lately. This was borne out today by a CBS News poll of the U.S. Senate. Of the three candidates mentioned, it was Conley who attracted the most no votes, 21. Rockefeller was the clear favorite, 32 yeses, 5 noes. Reagan followed with 19 yes, 15 no. Each senator was also asked to name his own candidate. 22 men were mentioned. None was an overwhelming favorite. Rockefeller polled the most, 7 votes. Roger Mudd, CBS News, Washington.
We'll have more on the Agnew story later in the broadcast. Now, this message.
Call me. Don't be afraid. You can call me. Maybe it's late, but just call me. Call me and I'll be around. If you call, I'll be right with you. You and I should be together. Take this love I long to give you. I'll be at your side forever. Call me.
We're the Mills Brothers for the Bell System. Call me. Whenever you're down, get up and call someone you miss. Call long me. Distance is the next best thing to being there.
Call me. Don't be afraid. You can call me. Maybe it's late, but just call me. Call me and I'll be around. Call me.
The Egyptians still seem to be a serious problem in the Sinai, but the Israelis are claiming a major victory against the Syrians on the Golan Heights and beyond. Bruno Wassertail reports from Tel Aviv.
It was the moment the Israelis had been waiting for since the start of the war, the big breakthrough that took the battle to the enemy. By nightfall, the Israelis said they had punched through the Syrian front line and were heading in the direction of Damascus. After a couple of hours, they were estimated to be less than 30 miles from the Syrian capital. As the news came through, spirits here rose at the thought that though the war may not be a very short one, it might not be a very long one either. It was a whiff of the Six-Day War, in which Israel bowled over its Arab enemies at a dizzying pace. People also seemed to draw strength from the words of Defense Minister Moshe Dayan, who visited the front lines as the Israeli fighting machine got the signal to move into Syria. Today, I think we'll teach Syria a lesson, Dayan said with a twinkle of his one good eye. The lesson is that the route from Damascus to Tel Aviv is the same as the route from Tel Aviv to Damascus. Bruno Wassertail for CBS News in Tel Aviv.
The Syrians have been talking about air battles today, not ground battles. Dean Brayless reports from Damascus.
From Syria, it appears that Israel is attempting a quick victory in the air against Syria before fighting the decisive battles in the Golan Heights. Today, I personally eyewitnessed an Israeli attack upon a fuel depot near Damascus. I saw a hydraulic plant and an oil refinery in Hummus that had been hit by Israeli jets. I also saw the 200 civilian wounded in Hummus. Half of them are not given a chance to survive without being severely crippled. Israel has been aiming for airfields in the oil supplies of Syria. The Syrian government says that after this day of heavy aerial combat here, that it has won a great battle today, downing 94 Israeli warplanes. Dean Brayless, CBS News, Damascus.
The World Tonight continues after this message.
This is Gene King for your Better Business Bureau. If you've recently bought a washing machine or dishwasher, just added a second bathroom, or even if your family has grown, you may find that you need a new water heater. Now be sure to choose the right size. While there's no set formula for estimating the hot water needs of a family, consider these. The number of people in your family, the size of the house, and how much you use the dishwasher and the washing machine. Now, what about future needs? You know, the demand for hot water will increase as the size of the household grows, as you need new appliances, and as the children become older. The fact is that a baby's bath would use only 5 gallons of hot water, while a tub of bath would consume nearly 15 gallons. You know, a water heater is an important long-term investment. Selecting the right size will give you many years of comfortable, convenient living. A consumer tip from your Better Business Bureau.
Attorney General Richardson said today that it's time to put the Agnew case to rest, and he appealed for public support and understanding.
There are 2 points which I would like to underscore this morning. The first relates to my strong hope that the American people understand and support what has been done. Second, I wish to urge consideration and compassion again for the Vice President, who has rendered a high service by resigning and relieving the nation of a prolonged and potentially disastrous period of anguish and uncertainty.
Richardson made that appeal at a news conference at the Justice Department. Fred Graham covered it.
Throughout the press conference, Richardson faced one recurring question. If Agnew was guilty of all the graft, bribery, and extortion that was alleged in the Justice Department's 40-page statement of charges, why was he let off without a prison sentence? Richardson's reason, most simply put, was to spare the country the anguish of a court trial and to spare the office of the vice presidency the stigma of a former vice president behind bars. It now seems that Agnew got off light indeed. He can still vote and hold office in Maryland. Disbarment from law practice is uncertain and perhaps unlikely. Maryland's prosecutors are not suggesting that they will prosecute him, and the federal government hasn't figured out yet how much he owes in back taxes on the payoff money he allegedly received. Fred Graham, CBS News, Washington.
My colleague Robert Shackney reports from Baltimore that 3 local Maryland prosecutors are asking for a look at the evidence gathered in the Agnew case. Shackney reports that they could still prosecute, but it's doubtful that they will. We'll have the Wall Street Report in a moment.
Nation, people, world, medicine, education, milestone, environment, behavior, cinema, business, law, modern living, cover story.
When I read Time magazine, I generally start from the back. Read theater, something on religion, education, sports.
Sabers are rattled, ambassadors confer. Economies wax and wane. But the true flavor and texture of life are in its fine details. The books people read, the movies they see, the people they marry, the things they believe.
It delves into all phases of human life, you know, and I really would be hard-pressed to try to improve it.
There's hardly much of significance that it doesn't handle.
The whole marvelous confusion is captured succinctly every week in Time magazine.
The whole magazine covers the scope of everything that's happening in the world.
You know what Time does. But unless you read it every week, you may have forgotten how well. Time makes everything more interesting, including you.
Stocks much higher today. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed at 976, up 15.5 points on a volume of just over 20 million shares. The average price per share was up 68 cents on the New York Exchange, up 21 cents on the American Exchange. And that's the financial side of this world tonight. A civilian president with a familiar name and a turbulent past will be sworn in at the presidential palace in Buenos Aires tomorrow. Ike Pappas has the story.
One of the largest security forces in the history of Argentina will be in place tomorrow when Juan Domingo Perón takes the oath of office as president of this country. At least 3,000 heavily armed troops will be in the immediate vicinity of the presidential palace, the Casa Rosada, as Perón accepts the sash and baton symbolic of the presidency. Battalions of other troops will be close by. The general public will not get inside the Plaza del Mayo in front of the Casa Rosada, but a hand-picked, well-searched, and closely watched throng of Perón loyalists will form an audience for the president as he gives his inauguration address from behind a bulletproof plate glass shield at least 5 inches thick capable, according to government officials, of stopping anything short of a tank. One of Perón's first acts following his election last month was to declare the extremist left-wing People's Revolutionary Army outlawed, which greatly angered the so-called ERP and made Perón the number one target in a wave of terrorism that is now gripping Argentina. Mike Pappas, CBS News, Buenos Aires.
The Oakland Athletics won the American League pennant today, defeating Baltimore 3-0 in the fifth game of the playoff series. Oakland will host the New York Mets in the World Series opener on Saturday. My colleague Robert Trout reports from Paris tonight that many Frenchmen feel the fate that has befallen Spiro Agnew is out of all proportion to the wrongdoing. Trout points out that most Frenchmen feel honor-bound to cheat the tax collector if they can, but he says there's a feeling of admiration for what some call democratic morality, with a small d, of course. Eric Severide has some observations now on the Agnew case.
This city eats and drinks politics, and it was overindulged last night. It woke up with a hangover this morning and has been feeling faint and fumbling all day. But not Attorney General Richardson. He was cautiously crisp and frank enough. The Agnew settlement, a monumental case of plea bargaining, did not follow the letter of the law. It was a response to the climate of the times. An arrangement made in a motel room, ratified in a courtroom, and its aim was to keep still more the cement of common trust that holds American society together from turning to sand. They concluded that a long criminal process involving the possible successor to the presidency would strain the structure too far. Government has to govern itself before it can govern the country. The prospect of an incumbent vice president on trial for crime, simultaneously with a quite possible constitutional showdown over the presidential tapes, and with a dangerous war going on, all this was too much to face. So Mr. Agnew, apostle of law and order, who used to speak against permissive judges, was treated permissively in the name of the general good. Mr. Agnew preached the old-fashioned virtues, and he practiced old-fashioned vices. There are far more subtle and legally safer ways for an office holder to enrich himself than by tax evasion or taking cash in plain envelopes over the counter. What startles this cynical community, besides the denouement itself, is that a man holding such a high office stooped to such low denominations. Mr. Agnew, poor most of his life, thought small. He was not intoxicated by power because he had none. He was intoxicated by money, the quick buck atmosphere of wheeler-dealerism, particularly in real estate and construction, which has so tainted our public affairs and vulgarized our landscape. It was the office holders involved in the Watergate and associated scandals who were intoxicated by power. With that old English verse in mind, one might say that Agnew was only stealing the goose from off the common while they were trying to steal the common from the goose. It is hardly debatable any longer that this law and order administration has turned out to be as lawless as any on record, and perhaps it already holds the record. The Nixon presidency will be discussed for decades, not only because of its policy judgments, good or bad, but also because of this president's judgments of other human beings. Maybe the psychologist can help the historians figure out why Mr. Nixon was attracted to these kinds of men and why these kinds of men were attracted to Mr. Nixon. The body count is already far too high to be explained by happenstance or ill luck. This is Eric Severide in Washington.
A footnote. A federal grand jury has indicted Egil Krogh, Jr., chief of the White House plumbers, for perjury. And that's the world tonight, Thursday, October 11th. This is Douglas Edwards, CBS News.